Loving Liberty Network proudly presents Heroes and Heroines, a weekly broadcast by Lawrence W. Reed, President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. Larry Reed has written nearly 2,000 articles and columns and is the author of 8 books. Most recently, the thought-provoking Was Jesus a Socialist? Loving Liberty welcomes you to Heroes and Heroines by Lawrence W. Reed.
In his 1986 best-selling book, All I Really Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten, Uncommon Thoughts on Common Things, Robert Fulghum mused as follows, quote, "Maybe we should develop a Crayola bomb as our next secret weapon, a happiness weapon, a beauty bomb. And every time a crisis developed, we would launch one. It would explode high in the air, explode softly, and send thousands, millions of little parachutes into the air, floating down to earth, boxes of Crayolas. And we wouldn't go cheap either. Not little boxes of 8, boxes of 64 with a sharpener built right in, with silver and gold and copper, magenta and peach and lime, amber and umber and all the rest. And people would smile and get a little funny look on their faces and cover the world with imagination instead of death. A child who touched one wouldn't have his hands blown off." End quote. Well, something akin to what Fulghum imagined actually happened almost 40 years earlier. The man responsible for it lives in Utah to this day and will turn 101 this October 2021. His name is Gale Halverson, and he's known in history as the Candy Bomber. I first learned of Mr. Halverson in late 2013. I was watching a DVD of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir's annual Christmas concert from the year before. NBC's Tom Brokaw narrated a spectacular segment about a U.S. Air Force officer who dropped candy from C-47s and C-54s during the 1948-49 Soviet blockade of Berlin. Then, across the stage, strolled a smiling Captain Halverson himself, more than 6 decades after his remarkable venture tugged at heartstrings the world over. In the wake of the Nazi surrender in May 1945, Germany was divided and occupied by the United States, Britain, France, and the Soviet Union. Berlin itself, deep inside Soviet-occupied East Germany, was similarly carved up into zones, with Stalin hoping the Western Allies would eventually depart and leave the entire city under Soviet control. Tension over the future of Berlin produced the first major confrontation of the Cold War. Interestingly, the proximate cause of the crisis that led to the Soviet blockade was the introduction of a new currency. For the 3 years from the end of the war until the spring of 1948, the Soviets handled the printing of Reichsmarks for all of occupied Germany, and promptly overprinted them. Stalin knew full well that currency debasement would thwart economic recovery, and that fit right into his plans to keep all of Germany weak and vulnerable to Soviet domination. By 1948, Germans were increasingly using cigarettes as money instead of the depreciating paper Reichsmarks. When West German economics minister Ludwig Erhard suddenly ended rationing and price controls and introduced a new sounder currency, the Deutschmark, on a Sunday in June, the Soviets reacted by cutting all land connections, including electricity, between Berlin and the other sectors of Germany occupied by the Western Allies. 100 miles inside the Soviet sector, West Berlin was instantly inaccessible by road, river, canal, or railway. Stalin offered to lift the blockade if the Deutschmark were abandoned, introducing his own new currency, the Ostmark, in the Soviet zone. But Germans en masse began using the Deutschmark and rejecting Stalin's Ostmark, even in East Berlin. To their credit, Erhard and the Western Allies held firm. They immediately organized a campaign of airlifts to ferry food, water, fuel, and other supplies to the besieged city. It was called Operation Vittles. Pilots and crews from the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa flew more than 200,000 flights over the next year, bringing West Berliners upwards of 9,000 tons of vital provisions every day. Stalin undoubtedly feared the ramifications of shooting down unarmed aircraft on humanitarian missions, but the airlift didn't go unchallenged. Soviet harassment took the form of shining searchlights at the pilots as they attempted landings and takeoffs, buzzing Allied aircraft, firing rockets and staging explosions. Communist propaganda, especially by radio, subjected Berliners to a constant barrage of threats and boasts that collapse was imminent. Stalin calculated that the West's resolve would weaken, but within weeks it was clear the airlift was working. Mass protests by Berliners against Soviet actions only strengthened the world's moral and material support for the Western relief effort. Finally, at 1 minute after midnight, on May 12, 1949, the Soviets threw in the towel and ended the blockade. Gail Halverson of Salt Lake City, Utah, was one of the thousands of airlift pilots who saved West Berlin in those 11 months of the airlift. While on the ground at Berlin's Tempelhof Airport, he noticed some local children observing the planes from behind a fence. He approached them and offered his only two sticks of gum. Grateful, the children broke the gum into pieces to share with each other, and those who didn't get any sniffed the empty wrappers. Halverson promised he'd come back with more and told the children that they would know his plane from the others by watching him wiggle his wings. A day later, he did just that as he dropped chocolate bars attached to parachutes made from handkerchiefs. Uncle Wiggly Wings, as the children came to call him, had delivered. Those few chocolate bars were just the beginning. Halverson made additional drops of candy that he gathered up from fellow airmen. The crowds of anxious children grew. Mail began to pile up as children sent letters to the airbase addressed to Uncle Wiggly Wings. In his book, Candy Bomber, The Story of the Berlin Airlift's Chocolate Pilot, Michael O'Tunnell recounts an especially poignant episode. In his words, quote, "By October of 1948, Peter Zimmerman must have decided he'd never score a candy parachute unless he took matters into his own hands. So he sent a letter, in English, to the man he hoped would soon be his chocolate uncle. He also tucked a map and a crude homemade parachute into the envelope. As you can see," Peter Zimmerman wrote, "after takeoff, fly along the big canal to the second highway bridge. Turn right one block. I live in the bombed-out house on the corner. I'll be in the backyard every day at 2 p.m. Drop the chocolate there." Poor Peter Zimmerman kept missing out on the candy drops. He wrote again to Halverson, complaining, "Didn't get any gum or candy. A bigger kid beat me to it." After several more drops that failed to reach him, Peter sent an impatient letter to Halverson. "You're a pilot?" he wrote. "I gave you a map. How did you guys win the war?" He offered to build a fire so Halverson would know exactly where he was. But at this time, to make sure Peter wasn't disappointed again, Halverson personally boxed up some gum and chocolate and mailed the package to Peter himself. End quote. When news of the unauthorized candy drops first broke in the international media, Halverson feared he would be disciplined by his superiors. But instead, they approved, and the effort took off on wings of its own. Christened Operation Little Vittles, Halverson's two sticks of gum blossomed into a full-blown campaign involving donations and volunteers from all over the globe. Candy makers from the National Confectioners Association in America contributed massive amounts of candy. Children and their parents donated candy and provided homemade parachutes by the tens of thousands. By the time the Soviets finally relented and ended the blockade, Operation Little Vittles had dropped at least 23 tons of sweets on Berlin. It was a huge factor in kindling the goodwill and close ties that still exist today between the German people and those of America and its allies. In the decades since the airlift, Colonel Gail Halverson has been honored many times in many countries for his initiative and his humanity. In 2010, he wrote a moving account of his experiences in those critical months of 1948-49, titled The Berlin Candy Bomber. Full of photos and copies of some of the children's letters, it's a gem of a read. Thank you, Gail Halverson, for your inspiration. People like you, helping others from the goodness of their hearts, are truly a beautiful thing. You and the other heroes of the Berlin Airlift saved a city of more than 2 million people. For Heroes and Heroines, this is Lawrence Reed.
Join us again next week for Heroes and Heroines by Lawrence W. Reed. Broadcasts are archived at lawrencewreed.com and lovingliberty.net, home of a growing network of allies for liberty.